Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
We are going to start off this morning with some music. Camilla O'Sullivan, thanks so much for coming in here live.
I'm delighted to be here.
On the Sunday just before Christmas. What are you going to start us off with?
I'm going to sing, I love the singer, Joni Mitchell, and it has Christmas in it, and it's a beautiful song called River.
Off you go. Take your time.
Thank you.
Put me at ease. He loved me so naughty, made me weak in the knees. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. I'm so hard to handle, I'm selfish and I'm sad. Now I've gone and lost the best baby that I've ever had. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. Oh, I wish I had a river so long I would teach my feet to
Camilla Sullivan, that was beautiful. Sunday morning. How do you do that, actually?
I'm not sure. I think I needed a whiskey.
later. Well, look, you're going to go off now for a while and you'll be back later on.
I will indeed.
With our
Thank you so much.
Actress. Thanks so much, Camille. In the meantime, I've been joined in studio by an extraordinary woman called Kathleen Keyes. Yesterday, if you're online at all, there was a letter in the Irish Times which went, as they say, viral. I remember starting to read it when someone posted it and thinking, oh, it's probably going to be quite a moving letter, but it's the most devastating letter. And the woman who wrote that letter, Kathleen, is with me. We decided to find you and bring you in. Kathleen, first of all, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Now, listen, Kathleen, for people who maybe didn't read the letter in the Irish Times and maybe aren't online or were really busy yesterday, would you mind reading the letter for them so they know what we're going to talk about?
Yes.
Thank absolutely. You so much, Kathleen.
This is my letter. Sir, at this time of year, families are dreaming of seeing their loved ones. The loved ones coming back by sea or touching down on tarmac, flowing through the arrivals lounge of airports, warm-cheeked and teary-eyed, breaking the barrier to the warm, homely arms of childhood. Or coming by car, snapping the doors shut for a while and walking in the front door of old familiarity, the family home. This is miracle making. 18 years ago, this Christmas, my first child of three, my daughter was very ill. She died early in the new year. It was a meteorite falling on a family that was already rocked by loss and absence. Since then, our family has been cruelly pared back to one, myself, the mother, living alone at home. Excuse me. At night I sleep to the rattles of an empty house. Even the wind has a faraway cry when it rattles at my window. My three children, my daughter and two sons, died from cystic fibrosis, a genetic disease of the lungs. They lived a full and spirited life together. Their illness did not define them. They were witty, intelligent and gifted with homegrown talents that filled this house with music and liveliness. They expressed their true selves to the world of their friends and gave of themselves freely and honestly. Losing a child is like having your heart torn out and your stomach emptied. Grief gets in the way of daylight, not to mention the nocturnal dark. Christmas is a black surround without tinsel, while the masses are plumping up the shop streets. But grief can be another day on the wheel, when paradoxically a blue sky can unveil and a white egret appears in the branch. I have named him Doy after my youngest son, whose pet name was Doy. He will fly and land with me as I walk beside the river in the valley behind our house. Before Doy died, his black eyes looked ahead and said, "Look for me in the trees. I will be there in the trees." Yours, Kathleen Keyes.
The most beautifully devastating letter, Kathleen. Well, first of all, tell me about your three children.
My three children were, they were my life. Grania was the oldest. She was born in 1986. And a year and a half later, Fergal was born, 1987. So they were like Irish twins. Mm. They were both very close and they loved one another deeply. And when Grania died in 2002, Fergal was only the tender age of like 13. Mm. And he was, you know, his life changed forever. Dara came along 5 years later, well, four and a half, say. And so he was like the baby that Grania mothered and Fergal played with and slagged and, you know, created all kinds of havoc with. But they were lovely. They were very close to one another. They had an illness, cystic fibrosis. Grania was diagnosed when she was two. And Fergal was very well and it was almost unnoticeable. But he was diagnosed because they took the test, the sweat test, when he was born. So they had to do three tests and then he was finally diagnosed. When Dara came along, I suppose we were hoping that he wouldn't have the diagnosis. It's a 1 in 4 chance with each pregnancy. So I guess that we were dealt a heavy hand. We were dealt CF. But we just rode with it and took it on. And, you know, the three of them had a great life. I can say that to you this morning. The three of them had a wonderful life. They were bright and, as I said, witty and full of life, despite the fact that they had cystic fibrosis that they had to live every day with. And there was a lot of work, a lot of home management, physiotherapy, hospital admissions. They weren't very sick from the beginning, but because you have this sticky mucus in your lungs, it has to be coughed up. It has to be got out, because that can bring on the advancement of lung damage, which is what happened eventually. It caught up. But they had normal lives in the sense that they were in school, you know, they did everything that every child does.
And yesterday as well, someone posted, because there was obviously a picture, a beautiful picture of Fergal. Gosh, he was such a handsome guy. Yeah. And I think it was in his graduation gear or something. And I think that also brought it home, because there was a photo of him so well. He died last December, is that right?
It's just over a year.
He was 31?
Had his birthday on the 22nd of November, and his first anniversary on the 2nd of December. So all the friends gathered. We had two events in the house and everybody clustered around and helped one another, comforted one another. There was music. Fergal was part of a band. He was in the Scavengers. Very creative, the kids. And Dara was also a keen guitar player and, you know, a drummer. Grania herself had all of this artistic flair as well, you know. They had something, and they were very vocal and lively. As I said in the letter, their liveliness and their life you know, it brought people to them. Their friends have been, one friend, I remember he said to me, you know, I was built by Dara. Dara helped build me. I suppose interacting with them, our house was always full of kids, and the windows were open and the music was rocking. And that's the kind of mother, I suppose, I'm glad I was and always would be. Embracing families. Young people are so beautiful. They're full of originality, and what they say is not manufactured, it's of them. And I would say that my children had that gift that they gave out, selfless sort of gift. You know.
But you were a large part of that, because I think what a lot of people say, even one of the messages just in said, Kathleen's most beautiful letter has struck a chord, because it was authentic and it was real in a world often of pretense and fakery. Her letter is to be so welcomed. It's ultimately a letter of hope. That's from David Whelan. But you were saying, like, young people, like your children, they were so full of life, unpretentious. But that's what your letter was. Why did you write it? To be honest, some people lose one child. That is devastating. You have lost your only three children. Did you write it as a wake-up call for people who moan about small things? Why did you write it?
I started to think about that yesterday evening, because I had a lot of questions coming my way. I think it was something within me that knocked on my own door and propelled my voice to say, I need to speak here. I need to express what's going on within me. I'm here in the house on my own. My family are wiped, in a sense. But they're with me in my heart. But I need to speak to the world. I need to speak to the nation. And of course, the nation went a bit crazy when I did. But it was something for me, because this, Miriam, is my Christmas. My Christmas is this expression to the people of Ireland. And it's also saying, you know, look into your children's eyes, be with them, conversate with them, give them time, give them of yourself. Because I think instead of running around and all these, I mean, I know a lot of children do extracurricular stuff, and I was thinking about this before I went to sleep last night. I think it's very good for children to do these things, but I think the most important thing is this connection between the father and the mother and the child. This time to idle, this time to ruminate about stuff. Give them dream time. Give them this creativity. And I think this is why Grania, Fergal and Dara, they could do what they wanted, because they had the space to do it and the space to create it themselves. And I think this is what's lacking sometimes, where people are rushing, they're filling cars, they're off away. I'm doing this, I'm doing my music lesson, I'm doing this, that and the other, which don't get me wrong, is very good. Mm-hmm. But I think homegrown talents, where they can work things out themselves and they can learn the guitar and they can... Dara, for instance, my youngest boy, he wrote films and he produced them at home in the house. He put up all the green and blue paper on the window and all his friends were there and he had a camera on his shoulder and he wrote the script. One of them was called The Kitchen. It's amazing. We have a legacy of his work. And the friends that come in, they were like old bachelors in the country sitting up having a drink in the kitchen. And he was taking off Dunbelievables. Oh my God, you're amazing. Dunbelievables, the two guys. I want to tell them this morning, they influenced my son. And they gave a lot of laughs in our house because Dara could take them off and he could also write his own script. And movie after movie after movie, they're all there. And we watch them now and again. The friends all come in and we sit down and watch them. There was so much originality and so many ideas, and there's a lot of imagination ticking away like a time bomb. Their minds were very busy and very active all the time.
And actually, we've so many texts in, but one is from Becky.
Becky, my beautiful Becky. Hello, Becky.
That was Fergal's girlfriend.
Love, yes.
Let me read it. I am lucky beyond imagining to count myself part of Kathleen's amazing family. They don't know how unique they are, how full of love and strength and kindness. Fergal Keyes is the love of my life forever and always. The magic of his soul stays. Kathleen is a poet with a poetic vision that has changed the world. She makes a difference, just like Ronya, Fergal and Dara. So even there, you have touched Becky's life in an incredible way. You just told me when I went to greet you when we came in, Kathleen, and you are so uplifting. You are so positive, which moves, I think, everyone. But then I said, do you know how big this went yesterday? And you said, yeah, I was at the grave, Miriam. Like, tell me about that yesterday when you realised people were reading your letter and noticing.
Yes, I had the phone and my sister was there, my twin sister.
Yeah.
And we were reading all of these journalists, my God. And they were all stopped in their tracks. And they were like, this has stopped me in my tracks. This is the most saddest letter. Well, saddest and beautiful. I like that beautiful was added on because
yes,
that's a creative element, which I think is very important to me. I'm not looking for pity. And I hope I'm not self-piteous. I'm just a woman. And I'm a human being who has lost the loves of my life. And I'm also trying to look through a lens to the world and say, at long last, after all of these years, Fergal has gone a year, and for 18 years it has been a long and lonely road. It has been a road to hospitals, carrying food, home cooked, into Vincent's hospital. The food in there was by any means good. Mm. Feeding them, looking after them, hanging up home IVs. They themselves working violently to try and live. Fergal worked his heart out. He sat at a desk and he emptied his lungs every day. And he did that 3 or 4 times a day. Nebulizers, looking out onto the street. I spoke the day he was of his mass. I told the people there. And I want to tell them because I want to join in. I want to let people know what it's like to have a chronic illness and what it was like for my children to look out the window and cough up thick green mucus every day and look pink and purple from coughing and emptying up this dire stuff from their lungs. And their lungs, you know, were hosted by all of these bacterias. But in the middle of doing all that, they were such beautiful, bright lights to the world, lights to their friends and to the people around them. They changed the world. And that's what I want to say to people. And I want to say, you can do it. You know, you can be very ill, but there's another side to you where you're giving of yourself also while you're ill. You're doing all of these things together. You're not saying, look at poor me. This is horrible. I'm suffering. Have pity on me. No, you're not crying and giving orders. You're just quietly walking this cross, because that's what it is. It's a Calvary road. And they walked it. And all I could do as a mother is walk with them, beside them, hold their hand, look into their eyes. And they knew they were loved. And they loved greatly while they were here. They loved. They never stopped loving and giving and selflessly giving of themselves. Their friends will never forget them. And I know that today. And I suppose for me, that's nice to know.
Yeah.
That they will be held in their friends' hearts, and that they will have given their friends a gift.
They were clearly extraordinary people, like their extraordinary parents. That last line about the trees, yes. That young man said that to you. Like, you know,
he called up the team on that morning.
How old was he?
He was losing the battle. He was 19 and three quarters. He said, call them up. And his dad said...
You mean the medical team?
Call who? And I looked at his dad and I said, he's calling the team to switch off, to take down all these numerous IVs that were sticking into him. I've had enough. I'm done. They did come and they took them off. And we had those precious minutes before they gave him the heavy gear. And his eyes were dark and bright and they were very vivid and very lively. He was in this moment of pure vividness. And he looked beyond us. He told us he loved us. And I remember he said, you know, I love you so much. Nobody could ever understand how close we've been. I can't imagine two people closer. I remember him saying that to me. It is on. This has been videoed because my former husband hit the phone.
Great, yeah.
And it lives.
Wow.
It's a piece of footage.
Great.
And he said he looked ahead. And his eyes were dark and glassy because Dara had a look of a French, he had a beautiful pale skin and the darkest of eyebrows and eyes. They were like two black coals. They were glassy at that point. And he saw some, I know he was somewhere else and he said, you'll see me. I'll be in the trees, look out for me. And I'm like, oh, we're all looking, we're all watching him, myself and Fergal and Aidan, his father. Mm. We were looking right down through him. Into his soul as he said those words. And those words have stopped people in their tracks. And
I know. That was the
I don't know whether to say I'm sorry I stopped you in your tracks, but maybe I want to stop you all in your tracks because I want you to join with me today in my mourning and in my grief. I want you to come in and celebrate the beautiful lives of Grainne, Fergal and Dara. I'm inviting you in to my little patch.
You are, I mean, I think I speak for everyone listening, the most incredible person. And by the way, you're a beautiful writer and the Booker Prize winner who's sitting out there, Colm Tobin, he said to you, you're a great writer. So I think if
all I can do is bow.
Yeah, no, before that. No. But you're going to stay with us because we have some lovely...
I want to hear all this beautiful
Yeah.
reading. Oh, I'm looking forward to the dead. I'm looking forward to all this reading.
Thank you so much for coming. It's a privilege to
thank
be talking
you so
to
much,
you.
Thank you so much, Marion.
And I've been joined by one of our finest writers, Tobin, two of our greatest actors, Barry McGovern and Helen Norton, and the wonderful Camille O'Sullivan, who already sang, is going to sing again. Barry, you are going to do some readings. And you, tell me what you're going to do, actually, because even listening to Kathleen, you think this is apt.
Yes, it's a reading from the end of James Joyce's The Dead, that wonderful story. And... it's, you know, it speaks for itself, really. It's just a beautiful piece of writing where Gabriel and his wife Greta are now in the Gresham Hotel after the Morgans' Christmas party, shortly after Christmas. And I think it's a beautiful piece of writing, but it is often associated with Christmas.
Okay, off you go, Barry.
The air of the room chilled his shoulders. He stretched himself cautiously along under the sheets and lay down beside his wife. One by one, they were all becoming shades. Better pass boldly into that other world in the full glory of some passion than fade and wither dismally with age. He thought of how she who lay beside him had locked in her heart for so many years that image of her lover's eyes when he had told her that he did not wish to live. Generous tears filled Gabriel's eyes. He had never felt like that himself towards any woman, but he knew that such a feeling must be love. The tears gathered more thickly in his eyes, and in the partial darkness he imagined he saw the form of a young man standing under a dripping tree. Other forms were near. His soul had approached that region where dwell the vast hosts of the dead. He was conscious of, but could not apprehend, their wayward and flickering existence. His own identity was fading out into a grey, impalpable world, the solid world itself, which these dead had one time reared and lived in, was dissolving and dwindling. A few light taps upon the pane made him turn to the window. It had begun to snow again. He watched sleepily the flakes, silver and dark, falling obliquely against the lamplight. The time had come for him to set out on his journey westward. Yes, the newspapers were right. Snow was general all over Ireland. It was falling on every part of the dark central plain, on the treeless hills, falling softly upon the Bog of Allen, and farther westward, softly falling into the dark, mutinous Shannon waves. It was falling, too, upon every part of the lonely churchyard on the hill where Michael Fury lay buried. It lay thickly drifted on the crooked crosses and headstones, on the spears of the little gate, on the barren thorns. His soul swooned slowly as he heard the snow falling faintly through the universe, and faintly falling, like the descent of their last end, upon all the living and the dead.
Such a magnificent piece of writing, and it's read so beautifully by you, Barry. Thank you. Really beautiful. Colm Tobin, you're going to read something for us.
This is a poem written by Robert Lowell as the Second World War is going on. He's a conscientious objector. He's converted to Catholicism, and he's in Boston, and he's thinking about the American Civil War. He's under the statue of General Hooker, Joseph Hooker, who lost the Battle of Chancellorsville to Robert E. Lee. So he's thinking about war, and it's called Christmas Eve under Hooker's statue. Tonight a blackout. 20 years ago, I hung my stocking on the tree and hell's serpent entwined the apple in the toe to sting the child with knowledge. Hooker's heels kicking at nothing in the shifting snow. A cannon and a cairn of cannonballs rusting before the blackened state house know how the long horn of plenty broke like glass in Hooker's gauntlets. Once I came from Mass. Now storm clouds shelter Christmas. Once again Mars meets his fruitless star with open arms. His heavy sabre flashes with the rhyme, the war god's bronze and empty forehead forms, anonymous machinery from raw men. The cannon on the common cannot stun the blundering butcher as he rides on time. The barrel clinks with holly, I am cold. I ask for bread, my father gives me mould. His stocking is full of stones. Santa in red is crowned with wizened berries. Man of war, where is the summer's garden? In its bed the ancient speckled serpent will appear, and black-eyed Susan with her frizzled head. When Chancellorsville mowed down the volunteer, all wars are boyish, Herman Melville said. But we are old, our fields are running wild, till Christ again turn wanderer and child.
Beautiful as well, Colm. Yeah, beautiful, Colm. Helen Norton.
Yes, Mary, I may be bringing the tone down.
That's fine. You do that, Helen.
Okay, this is a little bit of Shirley Valentine by Willie Russell. It's called The Nativity Play. When our Brian learned he got the part of Joseph, he was made up with himself. All the time he's rehearsing this nativity play, his behaviour is fantastic. The teachers are made up with him, I'm made up with him, the headmaster's made up with him, and he's made up with himself. He's practising every night in his room. We are weary travellers on our way to Bethlehem. And my wife is having a baby, and we need to rest the infant tonight. Well, the day of the play, I went down to school. The play started and was lovely. You know, all the little angels come on. They all give a sly little wave to their mums. And then it was our Brian's entrance and he comes on. He's pulling a donkey behind him. Well, it's a sort of hobby horse on wheels. And perched on top of it is this little girl playing the part of the Virgin Mary. And she is dressed beautiful. You know, our mother really has her dolls up to look the part. And she gives a little wave to her mum. Well, Brian goes up to the door of the inn. He goes, knock, knock, knock. And the little fella playing the part of the innkeeper appears and Brian starts, we are weary travellers on our way to Bethlehem and my wife is having a baby and we need to rest at the inn for the night. And then the little innkeeper pipes up, well, you cannot stay at the inn because the inn is full up and there is no room at the inn. And then our Brian is supposed to say something like, well, we'll go and find a lovely cattle shed and spend the night there instead. And then he's supposed to go off pulling the donkey and the Virgin Mary behind him. But he didn't. Well, I don't know. If it's the Virgin Mary was getting up his nose because she spent the entire scene waving to her mother, or whether our Brian suddenly realised the part of Joseph wasn't as big as it was cracked up to be. Whatever it was, instead of saying his line and going off with a donkey, he suddenly turns to the little innkeeper and says, "Full up! Full up! But we booked!" Well, the little innkeeper didn't know what day of the week it was. And he's looking all around the hall for someone to come and rescue him, and his bottom lip's beginning to tremble, and our Brian saying, "Full up, listen, I've got the wife outside with the donkey. She's expecting a baby any minute now. There's snow everywhere and 6 foot drifts, and you're telling me you're full up?" Well, the little innkeeper's lip is going 10 to the dozen, and the Virgin Mary's in floods of tears in the back of the donkey when the innkeeper finally grasps that the script is well out of the window and he has to do something about our Brian. So he turns to him and he says, "Listen, mate, listen, I was only joking. We've got room, really. Yous can come in if you want." And with that, the three of them disappeared into the inn. End of nativity play. An end of our Brian's acting career. Me and our Brian, we laugh about it now, but at the time I could have died of shame. It was all over the papers. Mary and Joseph failed to appear in Bethlehem. I was ashamed.
Well done to you, Helen. Kathleen loves that as well. He's still with us. Yeah, well done, Helen. Thank you so much. Camille, you're going to sing again for us. Yep. I think Fairy Tale and you were.
Yeah, I've sung this a few times on tour with Shane. It's, of course, I mean, Kirsty and him, that's the original, is just, you know, sublime. But I've had the joy of being swung around the stage with the Pogues. So going to try this one with two lovely boys. I'm doing Christmas Carol at the moment at the gate. So brought in Fionn Foley and Kevin Holohan and Cathal Sinnott on piano. So just going to.
Off you go, and we'll dedicate it to Shane and Victoria.
Absolutely.
Mary.
Yeah, with much love to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Off you go.
It was Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank. An old man said to me, "Won't see another one." And then he sang a song, the rare old Mountain Dew. I turned my face away and dreamed about you. Got on a lucky one, came in 18 to 1. When all our dreams will come true. They got cars, they got bars, they got rivers of gold, but the wind goes right through you, no place for the old. When you first took my hand on that cold Christmas Eve, you promised. Took my dreams from me. Well, has found you. I kept them with me, babe. I put them with my own. Can't make it all alone. I've built my dreams around you. Better time when all our dreams will come true.
This morning I was talking earlier to Kathleen Keyes, who wrote that most moving letter to the Irish Times yesterday, and here in studio I'm joined by Colm Tobin, Barry McGovern, Helen Norton and Camille O'Sullivan. Barry, you're going to do another reading for us, a new poem.
A new poem written only this week. My friend Mary O'Malley, the wonderful poet, I called her and said I was on Sunday. I said, you don't have a Christmas poem, do you? And she said, I'm working on one at the moment. Wow. I'll have it to you by Friday. And you don't have to read it if it doesn't suit, but I'll explain. It's called Cherry Tree Carol, but it's based on the old carol where Mary and Joseph are walking along and she's pregnant and she has a craving for cherries. And Joseph is annoyed and said, well, let whoever got you pregnant get your cherries, kind of thing, you know. And the voice of the baby Jesus from the womb asks the cherry tree to bow down low so that Mary can pick the cherries. It's a fanciful idea, but it's an old carol anyway. Cherry Tree Carol. I called the kings, expecting faded colours, old cardboard men, jaded from expectation and travel. Instead, they whirled in the air, turbaned young, rings flashing, ruby and gold. In spite of what they know, they glowed before me for a minute or an hour. Centuries spooled out around them, lures cast from a rod across the flat surface of the trembling elements. I called Mary, pregnant and homeless, in spite of what I know and how it ends. She came to give birth again in a shed, warmed by the sharp stink of a wolf's breath or the fog of cattle and ass. It wasn't the birth I wanted, but the story of this child in the womb that ordered a cherry tree to bow down low to my mother's knee. To satisfy her gravid craving and ours, the moon and the stars will sail under his feet, in spite of the nails and the lumbering beast, the masked moon and her icy stars.
Well done, Mary O'Malley. Lovely. Thanks for reading that. And the lovely thing is, during the break, is we were talking to Kathleen Keyes about a great writer she is and how much you love poetry. And Colm Tobin was about to read this, but he gave it to you because he's such a generous human being. What's the name of the poem?
It's Now Winter Nights Enlarge by Thomas Campion.
Off you go, Kathleen.
Now winter nights enlarge the number of their hours, and clouds their storms discharge upon the airy towers. Let now the chimneys blaze and cups o'erflow with wine. Let well-tuned words amaze with harmony divine. Now yellow waxen lights shall wait on honey love, while youthful revels masks and courtly sights. Sheep sleep's laden spells remove. This time doth well dispense with lovers' long discourse. Much speech had some defence, though beauty no remorse. All do not all things well. Some measures comely thread, some knotted riddles tell, some poems smoothly read. The summer hath his joys, and winter his delights. Though love and all his pleasures are but toys, they shorten tedious nights.
Beautiful. That's a lovely, beautifully read and beautiful choice by you, Colm. Mm. And you're going to do an Emily Dickinson?
Yeah, there's an Emily Dickinson poem and it's about death. I mean, just a bit, you know, and it's from the position of someone who has died and is in heaven and is looking down at the earth and thinking, I'd like to be down there and watching the seasons changing. And then at the very end of the poem, she has a thought, no, I don't want to be down there with them. I want them to come, you know, when their time is right, to me. So it's a poem about that sort of completion, and it goes through the seasons very slowly. 'Twas just this time last year I died. I know I heard the corn when I was carried by the farms. It had the tassels on. I thought how yellow it would look when Richard went to mill. But then I wanted to get out, but something held my will. I thought just how red apples wedged the stubble's joints between, and the carts stooping round the fields to take the pumpkins in. I wondered which would miss me least, and when Thanksgiving came, if father'd multiply the plates to make an even sum. And would it blur the Christmas glee, my stocking hang too high, for any Santa Claus to reach the altitude of me? But this sort grieved myself, and so I thought the other way, how just this time, some perfect year, themself should come to me.
That's lovely. Beautiful as well. Yeah. Helen Norton?
Yes. Now, so this is For So the Children Come by Sophia Lyon Faw, and she is a Unitarian Universalist kind of educator, progressive educator, and she lived till she was 101. And this is a really beautiful poem about children. For so the children come, and so they have been coming, always in the same way they come, born of the seed of man and woman. No angels herald their beginnings. No prophets predict their future courses. No wise men see a star to show where to find the babe that will save humankind. Yet each night a child is born is a holy night. Fathers and mothers, sitting beside their children's cribs, feel glory in the sight of a new life beginning. They ask, where and how will this new life end? Or will it ever end? Each night a child is born is a holy night, a time for singing, a time for wondering, a time for worshipping.
It's a beautiful poem as well, yeah. And Barry, you mentioned to me earlier that it's a Beckett anniversary and there might be something.
Yes, Samuel Beckett died 30 years ago today. Oh. And I thought I might read just as a tiny little bit. So I'm trying to get a Christmas thing for Samuel Beckett. But there's a lovely passage in Crap's Last Tape. It's just about 11 lines. It's very short, but I'll just read it because it refers to Christmas and holly. So it's Crap recording this on his own in his little cave into a tape recorder on his 69th birthday. Went to Vespers once. Like when I was in short trousers, went to sleep and fell off the pew. Sometimes wondered in the night if a last effort mightn't. Ah, finish your booze now and get to your bed. Go on with this drivel in the morning, or leave it at that. Leave it at that. Lie propped up in the dark and wander. Be again in the dingle on a Christmas Eve. Gathering holly, the red-berried. Be again on Crowan on a Sunday morning in the haze with the bitch. Stop and listen to the bells. And so on. Be again. Be again.
That's why they say, Colm, he is the best living for Rebecca. Yeah. No, but you really are. You've got another one, Colm?
Well, there's a Shakespeare sonnet. There are some good Shakespeare sonnets about winter. And this is one called How Like a Winter. How like a winter hath my absence been from thee, the pleasure of the fleeting year. What freezings have I felt, what dark days seen, what old December's bareness everywhere. And yet this time removed was summer time, the teeming autumn, big with rich increase, bearing the wanton burden of the prime, like widowed wombs after their lord's decease, like widowed wombs after their lord's decease. Yet this abundant issue seemed to me but hope of orphans and unfathered fruit. For summer and his pleasures wait on thee, and thou away the very birds are mute. Oh, if they sing, 'tis with so dull a cheer that leaves look pale, dreading the winter's near.
Beautiful. We're stopping people shopping the ground. I'm meant to be doing the last of the shopping, but I can't get out of the car listening to that. So that's our fault. And actually a lovely one for you, Kathleen Keyes. And Kathleen is, of course, the woman who wrote that letter to the Irish Times yesterday. And I hope this is okay to read. She said, "Hi, my name is Terry. I am a friend of Grania's, Kathleen's daughter who died. I knew Grania from play school all the way up to third year, and she's still a huge part of mine and the girls' lives. I just want to thank Kathleen for all the years we have spent sitting in her house drinking tea and chatting as we would have if Grania was still with us, probably traumatising Fergal and Dara with all our gossip. Yeah. Happy Christmas, Kathleen. Thinking of you, Grania, the boys always." That's lovely, isn't
it? And to you, Terry.
Yeah, happy really Christmas. Nice.
And the girls.
Yeah.
Aoife, Blanet.
As we come to the end, and Camille's going to sing us out with Holy Night, but for you, Kathleen, you wrote that devastating letter, but I'm watching you, and despite all you've been through, you're a really positive person. How do you do that?
I'm kind of springy. I can only describe it as a spring. It goes right down and then flops up again. Mm. There's something there that keeps me going. It's an intangible thing. I can't put my finger right there.
Yeah, it's great.
It's just some spirit that's deep down within that'll come back. No, I was ready for the ledge after beautiful Fergal passed. And I had to speak to people. I mean, I was over in Peterhouse. I was ready to. There was a time when I wanted to fly. I wanted to go with them. But there is a resource there that I can pull at or descend to. That's all I can tell you. I'm grateful to the universe for it, or whoever is there, though I am very angry with it. Mm. I am incredibly angry. I mean, you should hear me. I am hanging literally from the roof at times in the quietness of my own life. And this is the stuff that I'm wrestling with, that I have to cage in some way or get on to words.
And that's what you...
But I'm grateful. I'm grateful. Maybe it's the DNA of my parents. It's somewhere along my line that I was given a strength. But it has to be dug for. I mean, you're digging away. The sweat is coming. You're pulling the wheelbarrow. You're lifting heavy weights. But sometimes, obviously, I'm reaching it because I'm standing on my feet. Mm-hmm. And people ask me that.
I'm writing that extraordinary letter. I mean, this studio, everyone watches you. And it would, Colm. It sounds such a boring thing to say, but it would stop people in their tracks. Mm-hmm. And as we head into Christmas and as we part in this programme, what do you take away from
it? Well, I read it yesterday. I came across it online and I was really amazed by it because I thought it was so beautifully written, so controlled, and then so moving and so sharp. I mean, it wasn't as though that there wasn't any great easy consolation in it. It was hard consolation and it was hard. It was a hard won tone. I thought it was a beautiful piece of writing. I mean, I said that to you earlier. I thought it was really just how beautifully composed it was. I think you're obviously a very talented person.
Thank you very much. I don't know, is there dispassion in it? Am I dispassionate? But what I loved is when people said it was sad but beautiful.
It was controlled and in some passionate.
There was something
both of those things, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. Colm, can you get her a writing contract? That's not good. Out of the fact she
think
came.
anybody would read a book you wrote. So,
Barry, final thoughts on Christmas, I suppose, and everything else we've
Final thoughts on Christmas. We haven't time for a piece of Bernard Shaw, who hated Christmas, and he's a little short piece on it. We haven't time for that.
We actually don't.
But I find the commercialisation, like most people, really dreadful. And I always plan to have it you know, do it in November. And I'm going out tomorrow into town to do my Christmas shopping.
Helen?
Well, I'm doing a show in the Abbey at the moment called Drama at Inish, yeah. Which is great.
Doing great.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's great. And lots of, you're coming, Kathleen, I'm bringing you.
I definitely want to see
you. No, you are coming.
I was in the Abbey recently. Becky was speaking. She wrote a story, yeah. Story Slam. She was in the final of the Story Slam.
Fantastic. And I looked
up there because I love drama. Yeah. And I did some years ago. I was involved with some theatre, but I love the set. Yeah.
And you're going with Helen.
Well, you're
good
absolutely
you.
Coming. There's
yeah.
no question.
Good for you.
But it's great crack. To make people laugh at Christmas time, I think, is extraordinary. So my wish for people this year is laughter. Laughter and joy.
Well, my thanks, Joel. Camilo Sullivan, you're going to sing us out with Silent Night.
And just a little Christmas thing, probably from being in the show Past, Present and Future, just, you know, hearing what we've heard today, just love each other, all round kindness to yourself and others, because it's just, you know, that's
the most important.
Very important, and especially from what we've been listening today, you know, so sending love. So I'm going to sing a little hymn, Silent Night. I kind of looked at it like almost like a kind of starts off like a German kind of First World War and thing. And Carl Sinnott, actually, who asked to accompany me, he said, well, I actually have a harmonium that's from the First World War from a chaplain.
Wow.
So we're going to play it on that.
Well, well done to you both. Thanks so much
Thank
for coming.
You.
Happy Christmas to you.
Thank
all.
You very much.
Jamil, Helen, Barry, Colin.
Thank you
and
so
most
much.
Of all to you, Kathleen Keith.
You.
Listen, you're going to get a writing contract and new friends in theatre. So it's a happy ending for Christmas. Happy Christmas to everyone. We're back actually on Christmas Day morning at 10 o'clock. Please join us. My thanks and sound today to Sheena Neve Real, to our BCO, Denise Davies, and to our producer, Shannon Gorman. Let's go out listening to Camille singing Silent Night.
Stille Nacht, heilige Nacht, alle schläft, einsam wacht, nur das traute, hochheilige Paar, holde Knabe im Lockigen.